All right, so we're going to go ahead and start. It's cool, Carrie. Just like I said on the phone, let it roll off your back and just go. You'll be great. So everybody, this is Carrie. She is one of our ERC. She's an intern this year, so she's been helping out with Isabel's group, the small group, and she's been a great addition to the team this year. Carrie's personal journey has led her to a passion of health and wellness. She studied at IIN. I mean, how many of us didn't, you know, a lot of us did that one. It's the easy one. And she learned a lot of different management styles and a lot of different dietary theories, which, you know, span from Ayurveda to paleo to macrobiotics. And my favorite that was there, the breath only one. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
On that big chart they gave us. Carrie also has a master's degree in adult and continuing ed, and she's currently in the NEPT program, and we hope to get her graduated, within a year?
Yes? Yeah, that'd be great.
Yes. Okay. So here's Carrie, and she'll be taking over. Like I said, I'm going to go ahead and mute myself as well. So we'll just hear Carrie, and at the end, we'll have questions and answers. All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah. And if you could open your chat too, because I might ask you to type a few things into the chat. I'm actually going to turn my video off while I'm doing the presentation, but I will turn it back on again at the end.
Yeah, I'll turn mine off as well, but okay. My chat is open.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen. Okay, you should see Beyond Willpower, 3 Strategies for Overcoming Emotional Eating. Is that what you all see?
Yes, we do.
Okay, great. Great. And for some of the people who are in my small group, you may have seen some of this material before, but there is new material as well. So tonight we're going to explore different aspects of emotional eating, and I hope you'll leave learning something about yourself as it relates to the food you eat, regardless of whether or not you're eating to calm or control your emotions. Emotional eating is a sensitive topic for many people. It causes us to isolate ourselves and suffer in silence, and it has our roots in, guess what? Hormones. That probably doesn't surprise you, right? So I approach this topic with a lot of compassion and hope because it is something we can move beyond. Emotional eating is about your food choices and the emotional motivation behind those choices. We all use food as a pick-me-up from time to time. But when food becomes the number one coping mechanism or tool for distraction, it can slide into a harmful realm and lead to food addiction. So emotional eating is using food for a purpose other than nourishment, ignoring hunger signals and eating when not hungry, or not eating when hungry, or eating too much, or not eating enough to satiate. It's about using food as a coping mechanism for emotions or sensations that you don't want to feel. You might use food to numb out, to comfort or control, or for soothing feelings of guilt, shame, or powerlessness. Emotional eating is also about giving in to a sudden or urgent need to feel satisfied. And it's a feeling that you usually still is unsatisfied even with a full stomach. So to give you an example, I personally feel at times a slightly uncomfortable tingling in the tops of my arms and thighs on my skin. I don't know why, but sometimes I turn to food to distract me from the sensation. And food can also feel like a hug. So the sensation of food sliding down my esophagus is a touch that can sometimes be soothing. The problem with using food this way is that we're susceptible to overeating and gaining weight, which then carries its own health risks. So true or false, anyone can lose weight with enough willpower. What do you think? Type in the chat for me. Or yeah, thumbs up or thumbs down. That's a good one too. Yeah. Do you think of willpower as a tool that gets more effective with increased commitment? I can't see the chat.
You have false and no as answers.
Okay. That's correct. Yeah. If this were true, our New Year's resolutions would be a lot easier to sustain, right? So let's take a look at willpower. What is willpower? Dr. Susan Pierce Thompson, a brain and cognitive scientist and adjunct professor at the University of Rochester, teaches about willpower in her courses on food addiction. And one of the most important concepts is that willpower is actually just a brain function. We use it to resist temptation, focus, monitor task performance, and regulate our emotions, and make decisions. Have you ever heard of decision fatigue? It's real. Most of us naturally have only about 15 minutes of willpower at a time. And exerting self-control in one area of our lives, such as making decisions, resisting temptation, driving kids around, even regulating emotion, uses up this valuable resource and prevents us from regulating other areas. So how do you want to spend your willpower? People spend on average 4 hours a day resisting some kind of desire or craving. That's a lot of time. And the number one desire people spend their energy resisting is food. And food is everywhere, and giving into it is socially acceptable. So if you are susceptible to food cravings and emotional eating, you won't succeed if you're making your food choices in the moment. And we'll come back to this, but for now, let's look at the role of hormones and how hunger is regulated in the brain. You can see from our discussion on willpower is that we are not weak-willed. We're human with a human brain. It is our brain combined with stress that lead us to make poor food choices. And these food choices set off a series of hormonal reactions that have a very strong influence over when, what, and how much we eat. So we can see in this picture, the hypothalamus is in this red box here. It's this little piece of the brain here with these little lobes, and it secretes hormones that stimulate the pituitary gland that in turn control hunger. Also body temperature, thirst, fatigue, sleep, and a lot of other things. The brain stem in this blue box is our reptilian brain, and it's in charge of functions that we can't control: breathing, swallowing, blood pressure, heartbeat, etc. So when we think of what we can't control, we think of this brain stem here. So we all know insulin. In Dr. Rita Marie's programs, insulin passes sugar into our cells. And when you eat and your blood sugar levels rise, the hypothalamus signals the pancreas to release insulin into the bloodstream. Insulin attaches to cells and passes the sugar into the cells. And insulin can tell our body to use the sugar for energy now or to store it for future use. There's another hormone called leptin that signals the brain to stop eating and to get active. It's a hormone produced by fat cells. As our fat cells get fuller, they secrete more leptin. Leptin resistance occurs when our brain cannot see the leptin circulating in the blood and we eat more than we need. So why wouldn't our brain see the leptin? It's because insulin levels are high. Insulin blocks leptin, and in the worst place possible, the brainstem, which is in charge of things we can't control. This means that the most primal part of our brain is not getting the hormonal cue that we are full. It's convinced we are starving. And what do emotional eaters tend to do to satiate our hunger? Well, we reach for the foods that keep our insulin levels elevated. Does this sound familiar to anyone? So, in summary, as a population, we're using food as a coping mechanism for emotions and sensations we don't want to feel. We eat too much of the wrong foods, causing our insulin levels to rise, and the increased insulin blocks leptin, which makes our brains think we're starving, so we reach for more food. Our willpower is nowhere in sight, and because we've used it all up, checking emails maybe, right? So I did promise hope. So how do we begin to heal? I'm willing to bet that you all have an idea, right? Can you type in the chat, and maybe Annette, maybe you could read some of the responses if anybody has any.
All right. Self-care.
Exactly. Yeah.
Lower insulin levels.
Yep.
Stress management.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are hitting it. You're hitting it right on. In fact, my number one, the number one on my list is to reduce stress and replenish willpower. And Dr. Rita Marie has given us the key to do that. Do you remember what she calls it? It's you in balance, right? It's the Food Freedom Foundation. This is the key. The root cause of emotional eating is lack of self-care in these foundational pillars. And that just gives me goosebumps. The root of emotional eating is a lack of self-care. Does that surprise you? So to heal emotional eating in the brain, you need a plan that assumes you have no willpower at all and works anyway, because at any given moment, you may not have any. You can learn to bridge the willpower gap and not rely on a part of your brain that cannot shoulder that kind of responsibility by building automaticity. It's like brushing your teeth. You don't even think about it. You just do it. The key is to make decisions about what you will eat the next day when your emotions are calm, before you go to bed the night before. And then you eat only and exactly what you planned. So what happens when you do that, and it's also another key, is to balance your hormones. And to balance hormones, we stop eating flour and sugar of any kind. We eat regular planned meals and measure the quantity of food you eat and its effect on your blood sugar levels. Dr. Clapper offers a great graphic description of what happens when we eat flour and sugar. He said, if you do eat it, within minutes, your bloodstream is flooded with sugar. And soon the structural proteins in all your tissues, the elastic fibers of your skin, the hemoglobin in your blood, the filter membranes in your kidneys, the inner lining of your blood vessels, and the lenses of your eyes all get sticky with sugar. In the 98.6 degree Fahrenheit metabolic oven of our body, the sugars and proteins melt together and oxidize, like the browning of bread crust. And these oxidized, damaged, and congealed proteins, officially called advanced glycation end products, do not function normally. The gummed up oxidized protein fibers break, skin cracks in the sunlight, eyes become less permeable to light, muscle proteins do not contract as vigorously, and brain function dwindles. So basically, eating sugar ages us. So no flour and sugar, isn't that harsh? So in most people, about 2/3 of the population have an addicted brain. By that I mean they have a potential to develop addiction. Sugar and flour become powerful addictive substances in the brain, the same as heroin or cocaine. So sugar and flour are refined white substances, very similar to heroin and cocaine. And whenever you take a natural product like a poppy plant, and you refine it into a fine white powder, it becomes very addictive. And it's the same with flour and sugar. So expect that as you start to stop eating flour and sugar. Expect that the parts of your brain that have been hijacked by flour and sugar are likely to put up a real fight when you take them away. So be prepared for an emergency action plan.
They're agents that want to root out crime. They're investigators.
Hear somebody in the background. Like everybody's muted. So set clear boundaries for what you do and do not put in your mouth when the going gets tough, and get support. But as you stick to it and consistently eat good, nutritious food at mealtimes, planning and eating become automatic, hormones become balanced, the brain heals, and you begin to experience peace around food. There's a lot packed into that. It's not as simple to do, but at the same time, it is simple to get started by just eliminating flour and sugar and eating foods that don't have labels in them. So emotions, we all have them. And while some of us can easily articulate our feelings, others freeze at the thought of having to talk about emotions. So look at the differences between emotional and physical hunger. So emotional hunger starts suddenly and physical hunger arises gradually. Emotional hunger feels insatiable, but physical hunger allows you to stop eating when satiated. Emotional hunger wants gratification, and physical hunger can delay gratification. Emotional hunger craves specific foods or food combinations, and physical hunger is satisfied with a wide variety of foods. Emotional hunger is often accompanied by feelings of guilt, shame, or powerlessness. But physical hunger is not associated with negative feelings. And emotional hunger is in response to the mind, and physical hunger is in response to the body. So think about how you might experience the difference between the two as you move forward. So decoding your why of eating, this is something I encourage you to do later. You'll have a copy of these slides. You can take a picture, a screenshot of this if you like. But take time later to sit and write out the answers to these questions, or think about them if you're not a journaler. One is, how do you experience hunger in your body? Dr. Joel Furman, who has a clinic in New Jersey and also a treatment center in San Diego, California, taught that physical hunger in the body is often felt in the throat and in the salivary glands. And when I first heard that several years ago, I was wondering, I thought, I don't think I've ever felt that. And then one day I hadn't eaten in 5 or 6 hours. And I instinctively put my hand up to my throat and I thought, I hope I'm not getting sick. I'm not getting a sore throat. And as I had my hand up around my throat, I sort of realized what I was doing. And at the same time, I realized I am really salivating. I mean, I was really salivating. And I went, oh, that's what he meant. I'm hungry. And it made perfect sense. And so that's become one of my signs that I look for to see if I'm really hungry or if I'm only emotionally hungry. It's one of the physical signs that I've been able to relate to. So how do you experience hunger in your mind? You know, for example, are you eating when or what you should? In quotes. So what emotions trigger hunger for you? And when do you feel emotionally satisfied after eating? What are 3 to 5 ways that your eating habits change based on the emotions you feel? You know, how does sleep and sleep quality influence your eating habits? Or the people you're with, how do they influence your eating habits? Or the messages you receive from media? So as you reflect on your answers to these questions, do you notice any patterns? And that was the exciting part for me, is noticing the patterns. So if you eat to suppress, soothe, or control emotions, what ways can you crowd out unpleasant emotions with self-nourishing practices? For example, how might you crowd out anxiety, anger, fear, or sadness with mindfulness and self-care or feel-good movement. And you can feel free to think about these yourself. If you want to post them in the chat, you can do that too, if you have any aha moments. But when you feel unpleasant emotions, it's easy to turn to unhelpful coping methods. So building an emotional toolkit can help you manage tough emotions by providing you with healing and tangible ways of self-soothing. So crowding out, creating distance, creating a to-don't list, shifting your internal judgments, and reaching out to your support system are some of the tools that might help. So here's what I learned when I started answering these questions for myself. I love eating in unique, cozy neighborhood coffee shops. I just get excited. My brain goes, oh, this is fun. And I realized that I grew up in a coffee shop. My grandmother founded and owned Ann's Coffee Shop in Menlo Park, California for over 40 years, which just closed last week after 75 years of serving the community. So I worked there growing up and I found companionship with my grandmother. There was great food and a sense of purpose. And when I feel driven to go get coffee or go to one of these coffee shops, I have to pause and ask myself, what am I really craving? Is it connection? So instead, I ask myself, how can I meet my need for connection without going to a coffee shop where I'll likely consume foods and beverages that will raise my blood sugar? So I still go to and enjoy coffee shops. I just tend to avoid them if I'm craving them, if that makes any sense. So we're reaching the end of this presentation. What insights, if any, have you gained? Could you type in the chat some ideas about what you learned about yourself or about emotional eating in general? Were there any ahas for you? And if there's any in there, maybe you could.
Yeah, and then when we're done, we have a few questions, but so far, no ahas. I have one. Interconnectivity between insulin and leptin and emotional eating. Thank you, Catherine. Growing up, we celebrated events with a cake. That's from Wheaton.
Right. Thank you. So I have one final quote. I don't know if Isabel's still on. I saw her earlier, but she said something at our last small group session that just rang so true for me. And it's the most important part of this whole program is to take action. And I think it's true whether we're an NEPT student, whether we're part of the ERC program, the whole reason we're doing this is so that we can take action and know what action to take. So thank you for that, Isabel. And so here's a few actions to help you get started if you need them. You may have some of your own, but make a habit of taking 2 minutes of self-care before eating any meal. It's hard to take care of yourself and then eat something you know might be harmful. So taking care of yourself for 2 minutes might be taking a mini vacation, like Dr. Rita Murray likes to do, to breathe, to go for a walk, to just step out in the sun, to play with your puppy, etc. Another thing you can do is just sit with your thoughts and emotions and observe them with non-judgment. Consider that they are trying to help you, not hurt you. So this concept is from internal family systems, if anybody's heard of that before. There's a really good book called You Are the One You've Been Waiting For by Richard Schwartz. And my husband just finished it, and I see so much difference in the way he is at the moment. I'm just really curious to explore this with him, but it's a whole nother presentation on its own, internal family systems, but it's amazing. It helps us observe our thoughts and emotions to kind of put some distance between us and them and then consider how they are trying to help us and not hurt us. There might be parts of us that are protecting us by trying to be controlling and trying to control things. So other parts of us might want to be nurtured. So, et cetera. It's quite fascinating. And then there's always connecting with one of our health coaches or other people who can support you as you take on some of these endeavors. So I want to thank you for being here tonight or for listening to the recording. I'm grateful for your presence. And I'm ready for questions. What questions do you have for me?
Okay, that was great, by the way. Thank you. Let me go back up in the comments. I'm going to read what's here, but if you all have questions, feel free to raise your hand and I'll work everybody in. Okay, so Kim asked, you were talking about flour. Does that include flour from alternative sources like quinoa or teff?
It does. And you can test, you could do an experiment, but it's that whole concept of grinding things into a small weight. I'm going to turn my video back on if I can find it. Oh, maybe I can't share my screen and do that.
I think because of the way new Zoom has been configured, you've got to unshare and then find it and then share it again.
So
you can't just.
Yeah. So whenever you refine something into a fine white powder, even almond flour, quinoa flour, teff flour, it gets absorbed into our system a lot faster. So you can experiment with it depending on how susceptible you are. It may or may not impact you. So if you take it out of your diet altogether and you just eat whole grains, whole intact grains, and you see how you feel after a few weeks, and then you try something with one of those flours, does your thoughts about food start to creep in? So where you start thinking a lot more about food throughout your day, and you start having a lot less peace around food, that would be, then you'd know, yeah, that's not working for me. It's triggering me,
okay.
Triggering my brain.
And Jenny with the Y, because we have two Jennies on the call. She shared that Susan Pierce Thompson doesn't allow any flour in her protocol.
Right.
Because, you know, we process all flours the same. I think that's kind of what you were just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to stop for a moment. Let Catherine go ahead and ask her questions. She has her hand up while I continue to scroll. So Catherine, go ahead and unmute. You're up.
Thanks, Carrie, for doing this. I appreciate it. It's a subject near and dear to my heart because I unfortunately have figured out I am a major emotional eater. I'm doing Trisha Nelson's Heal Your Hunger program. I just started that 2 weeks ago and I'm finding it very helpful. Dr. Reed was actually the one who suggested I check out Trisha Nelson. I hadn't heard the whole idea of leptin resistance being connected in any way to emotional eating before. And I wanted to just pull the thread a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that all emotional eaters have leptin resistance?
Well, no, it depends. I consider myself an emotional eater, but I've healed a lot from it. And I don't think I'm resisting leptin anymore. I think I used to though. So it's when you don't, because now I get the signals to stop eating and I can listen to those and I do stop eating. I'm not eating compulsively like I used to. So the leptin resistance is kind of when you open up the bag of whatever and you intend to eat just a few and you end up eating the whole bag. You're not getting those, your brain's not getting the message that, hey, I've had enough, I want to stop eating.
But I guess I'm not sure if that's really emotional eating though. I think that certainly leptin resistance and you're not getting the signal to stop eating is very real. And I have that too. And maybe it's just more common in emotional eaters because we tend to eat the bad stuff. My understanding is that, you know, it's not like an emotional eater is just waiting for hunger. You know, we use food as a way to deal with emotions, to either numb them or, like you were saying before, I use food primarily as a way to kind of self-medicate for all the chronic pain I have.
Right.
And certainly the leptin resistance doesn't help things because I don't get any other feedback, you know, that I should stop. But it's not really the physical hunger that's driving me. It's the want that's more the emotional. And my understanding is that once you're an emotional eater, you're always an emotional eater, even if you're managing it. Unlike with leptin resistance, you can recover. Just, you know, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. And there's a fine line between food addiction and emotional eating. They're very closely tied together. And the, you know, whether the leptin response is more on the food addiction side than the emotional eating, you know, we tend to overeat, and the overeating creates an, you know, food addiction, and it kind of, they just kind of go hand in hand. So you're right. You know, we're eating emotion because of emotions. But it's also affecting our brain chemistry.
Yeah. Can I ask one other question? And it has to do with your suggestion about planning the night before. I think in the chat, there's this a little bit of discussion about that where some people are like, yeah, that works well for me. I found that for me, if I plan any meal planning, night before, day before, weeks before, it makes me want to eat like now. And it's usually not arugula. and it's also where then, you know, there's this idea then of, well, then I have a plan there, but then I want to rebel against the plan.
Sure. You know, that book that I mentioned, there's a part of you, and this is, I'm just taking this from what you're saying. It sounds like there's a part of you that is saying, I want to control this. There's no way that I want my food to be controlled. And that part of you is protecting something inside. It's protecting an emotion. That other part of you is saying, you know, oh, Catherine, I just want to nurture you. I just want you to feel safe and comfortable. And there's a whole internal family system that goes on in us, in our mind. It's fascinating and it really works. So as we get in touch with those parts of us, and we actually, you know, have conversations with those parts. You know, we can think of them, put some distance between us and them. And I pretend that this part is sort of sitting in a chair and I can have a conversation with my authentic self and this part of me that just really wants to eat or really wants to control or really wants to indulge. I can get curious about it and, you know, love it and be kind and say, well, how is it that you're helping me? And the answers come. And there's people who are very skilled. There's counselors very skilled in these kind of systems. But if you start with a book, and there's other, if you look at internal family systems or other books by Richard Swartz too, you'll learn more about it. And to me, that has been the key to recovery from emotional eating, from food addiction.
Cool, thank you.
So I'm at the point in the chat that where Jenny was talking about eating from boredom, and she gets triggered every time she walks into her kitchen. And since Jenny has her hand up, I'm gonna ask her to unmute and she can come on and talk to you about that, okay?
Sure.
Hi.
Hi, Jenny.
thank you, it was great, Carrie. So I just had two comments that I'd be really interested in to hear what you or anybody has to say about it. The first thing is the whole balance. And it's remarkable to me how different my thoughts and the way I live with food when I'm happy and busy and purposeful versus when I'm bored and stuck at home. It's just like I'm two completely different people in my relationship to food. I can get hungry and it kind of feels good to be hungry when I'm happy and balanced and I look forward to a good meal and I never feel like I overeat. And I mean, sometimes, but you know, it's two completely different things. The other thing was that I find it really hard in our current society, the whole foodie angle of things where food has become such a focus for so many people, and my family included, that, you know, we travel and the first thing they're doing is trying to find the best restaurant that has the most reviews, and their day is organized around eating. And it's hard for me personally to live with that and find peace with, you know, I often just don't go to the meal because I don't need to eat at that point, or there's nothing, if you're sticking to Rita Marie's program, that I can eat. And it's just easier to turn it down. So I'm curious what you have to say in regards to those two things, your experience.
The boredom, yes, definitely. What I try to do is I try to recognize that I feel bored, it's not hunger. And then the next question is, what can I do to relieve my boredom? Is it connection that I'm looking for? Do I need to see if I can find a friend who's willing to go for a walk with me? That's why I have my puppy. He's around here somewhere. There he is. He just had surgery today, so he's in a coma. But he's been great for me because he's available anytime to go out, you know, for a walk in the woods, by the lake, whatever. But the question is what, so I'm not hungry, I've determined that, then what am I needing emotionally? And I try to meet that need.
Does depression ever interfere with that, or has it in the past, where I feel like sometimes I get depressed when I'm bored, and so I don't even make an effort to figure out to put some energy towards fixing the problem.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just want to crawl into bed with a good book, mm-hmm. and that's totally okay. That's taking care of yourself. Mine is like, I don't want to be around people right now. Yeah. Or I'll binge watch movies. I'll find a series I like and just spend the whole day doing that if that's what I need to do. What was your other question? Oh, potlucks and things like that and traveling?
No, the foodie culture that we live in now, where food is such a focus. And an example of that for me was just that, like, even when I travel and I'm with family and the whole day is revolved around finding the best restaurant that appeals to somebody, and they'll be sitting at lunch planning where they're going to go for dinner.
I've been doing a lot of driving up and down I-5 lately. I'm at the north end of I-5. My family is kind of in mid California. So I live in Washington State, right by the Canadian border, right off I-5.
And are you in Bellingham?
I am in Bellingham.
Oh, I'm in East Wenatchee.
Oh, yay.
Anyway, okay, sorry. I want to.
So I bring my own food and I pack it. And I've done that with potlucks too. Potlucks are disastrous for me. It's hard. And it's interesting to watch, you know, I just observed myself last year or before COVID. My husband had a big potluck for one of his community groups, and I went. And so the first thing I did is I look on the table to see what is it can I eat? And then I'm kind of going through, you know, through the tables and picking things out. But I've had to make so many decisions just in the course of doing that I've used up all my willpower. And then I'm getting into things I really don't want to eat. So overall, it's a really frustrating experience for me. And so I learned to just bring my own food. And I do that when I travel too, just bring my own food. And then it's a lot less of an issue. And I try to focus on, you know, people, but it's hard. It's hard for me. I'm not that great at it yet, but I'm getting there.
When I'm driving, I often have taken my own food too, especially long trips, like cross country trips. Mm-hmm. It's when we fly and you can't really pack your food with you. And that's often the times that it's most difficult. So
you actually can pack your food and take it on planes, and it doesn't count as a carry on.
Oh,
you can have a third bag that's just your food.
That for more than just the meal that you want to have on the plane, like for, wow, I didn't know that.
You still have to stay within their liquid limits and those things.
Okay.
You can actually get a lot more on than you think you can.
Okay. And, I didn't know that.
And here are the key words. It's a medical necessity.
Oh, okay.
I get a lot on a plane saying it's a medical necessity.
I thank you. I did not know that at all, that you could do that.
And when you land, there's grocery stores. And when you land, there's services. If you don't have a car, you know, there's all those shopping services now. I remember Angelica talking about flying from wherever she was living at that time into Austin to go to Shine. And she forgot to tell Rita Marie that she was having groceries delivered to Rita Marie's house. So all these groceries appeared. So that's how she got around that. So there's, if there's a will, there's a way. I use, and I will, if I'm traveling, one of the things I do is I go on the internet. Where can I shop there? Where can I eat that fits my diet?
And I've had friends who mailed their food to a hotel as well.
And slow cookers are great to heat things up. Crock-pots.
Yep. You do all kinds of stuff in those.
Yeah. It's but thank you. That was good. I'm going to ask Kim to come on and ask her a question. It has to do with sweet spot and cravings and nuts. And that way she can explain clearly what she's asking.
Can you hear me?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Speak up. Carrie can.
Yes. How about now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. So my question was, you had mentioned that the cravings, you know, cut out sugar and flour, right? So I was saying on a food plan like the sweet spot, where there is no sugar, there's no flour, alternative or otherwise, but I was still having a lot of cravings, and let's say for nuts, right? Nuts are big on the sweet spot. So what would the person do in that case?
What was your question? I didn't hear the last sentence.
Oh, what would you recommend that a person do in that case?
I'd have to look and see what you're eating overall. So I don't know that nuts and seeds will really create cravings. It could be, yeah, what else are you eating, Kim?
It could be the fat. It could be she's craving the good fat.
It could be.
And the nuts.
Maybe. I mean, if your triglycerides are going up, that has to do with sugar as well. Right, Annette, I think.
Yeah. Like, this is so bad. I'll crave, when I'm craving like salty, greasy potato chips or French fries, I know it's my body actually asking for good fats. So if I give it avocado, or I'll do a spoon of coconut oil, which I know Dr. Rigmer's isn't one of her favorites, but if I have those instead, that craving's gone. It stops it.
So if you have some of it, it's gone?
Pardon me?
If you eat some of the fat, it goes away?
If I eat that good fat, it goes away.
Like coconut cream?
Pardon me?
Like coconut cream?
I'll do the cream or the oil. They're interchangeable to me when I have that. And if I'm really craving like salty potato chips, sometimes it's because I'm getting sick. Don't ask me where my body picked that up, but it did. And Catherine put, could the salt and the crunch of the nuts be what
Yeah, and then if it's a craving, yeah, is it really food that you're craving, or is it something else? Is it connection with people? Is it, you know, movement? Is it sleep? You know, think about what happens to, you know, what we crave when we're sleep deprived.
Well, and Catherine, I was thinking the same thing. So I know when I'm craving chocolate, I'm magnesium deficient.
Hmm.
So what is your craving telling you? What are you missing?
And that's where, you know, your coach can probably really help you tease that out as well. Yep. That's interesting with magnesium and chocolate.
I hadn't didn't know that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes when I'm having really bad chocolate cravings, if I up my magnesium, the chocolate craving goes away. Or muscle twitches. I'll get like a twitch in my eye and it'll go away. But yeah. Jenny wants to know the name of the book again.
It's You Are the One You've Been Looking. You Are the One You're Looking For by Richard C. Schwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z. Let me look at my slides again. I'll tell you. You Are the One You've Been Waiting For by Richard C. Schwartz. I'll put it in the chat.
Okay, and Ronnie, you put your hands up. Ronnie?
Yeah.
There you go.
Carrie, you're familiar with Susan Pierce Thompson's, like, that quiz that she had?
Mm-hmm.
The addicted, the addicts quiz?
The susceptibility quiz, I think.
It's like, and she's had it. The susceptibility. Can I put that in the chat? Is that okay? The link for it?
Oh, yeah, it's okay with me. Sure.
Okay. So for those guys who are talking about, you know, if you want to know where your addiction is, it's kind of a nice little tool. Like Kara's been using Susan Pierce's Thompson stuff, and it's, you did a good job of it, actually. It brought some really good, like, reminders. That's the way I got onto Dr. Rita Marie, because she was a guest with Susan Pierce Thompson. She's quite astute, but that whole, like, planning it out, because the last couple of days I've been working, and I've worked, like, I don't know, all of 6 days in the last year and a half. So all I can do is, like, I've got loads of time to eat and plan what I'm going to eat, but all of a sudden, eat and just eat on a whim, like, what do I want to do now? Because I've got hours, but it's like, had I planned the last couple of days out a little bit better, I might have been not so, like, first of all, famished, and second of all, it's not so erratic about what I've been eating. So yeah, good reminder. Thank you for that.
Yeah, for me, it's all about peace around food, whether it's emotional peace or physical peace from cravings. I just want to live with that, with peace. I don't want to be thinking about food 24/7 or, you know, being consumed by it.
Yeah. And I wanted to kind of give you a thumbs up on the IFS as well, because I've been working with a therapist on that. And it's not just talking to yourself about food. It's finding that there's parts of you that drive you to do different things. And, you know, it's like, yeah, you can talk to yourself, but it's like, if you can find a therapist with that kind of a system, or at least look at, Schwartz has got, he's got some videos on YouTube.
Okay.
I like that. That's good information there. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like having multiple personalities, but you're not really Sybil.
Just caught that. That's good. Okay, before we wrap up, anybody else have a quick question? We've got about 8-10 minutes left because we did start late, so we can go a little bit later. It's fine. So anybody else have any feedback questions for Carrie before we wrap it up?
So yeah, my hope is that you were able to take something away from tonight that inspires you or helps you on your journey.
It was really good. Thank you. I learned some things. That's always good. Mm-hmm. Jenny gave you a thumbs up.
Harry, I had a question.
Sure.
Did you mention anything about water? I know Dr. Rita Marie said before, you're not hungry, you're just thirsty. And yeah. How could water be used as a replacement for your desire to eat or to thwart that off, that need?
Yeah, that's a good point, Martha. I hadn't included that. It's one of the things that I have on my checklist where if I don't think I'm physically hungry, the first one is actually, am I thirsty? You know, and am I absorbing the water that I'm drinking is another question.
So, oh, well, I know a lot of people don't like water. So what would you suggest that they do? I've heard I've told people just get a smaller glass. You know, you don't have to pour a 32-ounce glass. And they say that even with a smoothie or that drink that the gut rejuvenator with the lemon and the salt in the morning and the peppermint, people have a really hard time getting that down. But that's a great way to start your day.
So sometimes what I do, especially in the morning to help me absorb the water I'm drinking, is I just put a tiny pinch of salt on my hand and I pop it in my mouth so you feel that vibrancy. And then I drink water and it makes the water go down a lot easier. I think I end up absorbing it more. I don't know how that fits with people's, you know, everybody, the bio-individuality that we learn through IIN is a real thing. I mean, everybody's different and we all have different microbiome and, you know, is salt okay for us to drink, you know, or eat or consume? So yeah, I'd like sparkling water as well. But that's personally what I do to help with water.
Thank you, great water. Presentation.
Thank you, Martha. Thanks for being here.
Sure. So I got another question, if you're okay with that.
Totally.
How do you know if you're absorbing water?
I feel less thirsty.
I've heard that before and I don't know.
Yeah, if I feel dehydrated, you know, if I'm starting to get a headache or get a little bit, you know, not settled, and I just keep feeling like I want to drink water and drink water and drink water, but my blood sugar's fine. You know, it's not that my blood sugar's out of whack. Then I try the salt thing and it stops that from happening. So I think it's an electrolyte balance. I'm just making that up. That's just based on my own experience.
I like that. At least you're honest. Looking at the intensity of your urine, is
right.
You know, if it's pale, you've been drinking enough. If it's really, really yellow, I know I need to drink more water.
Yeah. You know, and I'm just excited because.
And then I get the headache thing going when I get too dehydrated.
Say that again.
Yeah, I didn't hear either.
Go ahead, Carrie. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. What was I going to say? Oh, I've just been really excited because all the things I'm doing, like from Dr. Rita Marie's program and from all the other things I've learned over the years from different providers, you know, has really started to work. And I went and got labs recently, and I just got them back yesterday. And I went to the doctor and he said, you know, you are no longer insulin resistant. And I was like, yay. Yeah. So it can happen, you know, yeah. And this stuff works. This stuff works.
It really does. And congratulations.
Yeah.
Catherine has her hand up, and then it might just about be time. So, and Catherine, I love your comment. Go ahead.
Thanks. Carrie, another, you had mentioned like a list, a checklist that you go through in your head, like, am I thirsty? Am I absorbing water? So this is your checklist when you want to eat? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what else is on your checklist?
It's, am I thirsty? What Martha mentioned. I look for physical symptoms of hunger. Has it been 5 or 6 hours since I've eaten? Okay, yeah, I'm probably hungry. Am I feeling the tightness in the throat? And am I salivating? Well, okay, I'm hungry. But if I don't, you know, if it's only been 2 or 3 hours, especially if it's been under 3 hours, you know, was the quantity of food that I ate enough to sustain me? Is another one. So sometimes I eat a small breakfast, smaller breakfast than usual, I'm going to be hungry in 3 hours. And if I've been working at my computer and I'm not moving around a lot, I'm getting bored. You know, I really have to check, am I really hungry? And sometimes my body says, oh yeah, you're hungry. Yep. Time to eat. And so that's kind of when I run through the checklist. It's like, okay, am I really hungry or am I bored? Or do I need connection? Or do I need affection? You know, and because I'm susceptible to emotional eating and I don't want to undo all the work I've just done, I'm careful. And I try to take care of myself. I try to stay in those foundations because I know it's like any addiction, you know, heroin addicts, alcoholics, if they stop taking care of themselves, they relapse. And it's pretty cut and dry. And it's the same with food addiction. If you don't take care of yourself, you're going to relapse and start making poor choices. And some of the choices you can recover from pretty quickly, like they just, you know, like if I want junk food, I'm going to go look for healthy junk food. But it's still junk food for me. You know, it may be whole food, but it may not be what I need to be eating. And so it can throw me off. And, you know, if I'm not careful, I can go into a binge that can take me 3 or 4 months to recover from. And I just don't want to risk it. So I don't. And there's other foods I can eat, like, and it'll just, you know, I'll be able to recover from really fast. And after a while, you kind of get to know what they are. But I just don't want to even be in the position where I'm tempted. You know, I just want to take care of myself so that I don't have those cravings or those food thoughts, that I can live freely, enjoy my food, and not be suffering cravings all the time. Emotional or physical.
Cool. Thank you, Carrie, and congratulations on, you know, overcoming emotional eating and overcoming insulin leptin resistance.
Yeah, thank you.
Good job. Learning
to live with it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Carrie. Sorry about the confusion and the tech issues, but know that you're not the only one that happens to.
Thank you for that.
Happens to a number of us when we're trying to get on and do stuff. It is not, and it seems to be even weirder the last month or so. I don't know why. Anyway, you did great in spite of the crazies in the beginning. So I want to thank you for persevering and being here. Thank you so much. Thank you all for being here. And we can unmute if you want to say good night and thank you. Thank you all, because I can't, you've been muted.
Good night. Thank you, Carrie. Night.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Good night. Thank you. Nice to see the rest of you guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
Welcome, Rob, to NEPT. That's exciting.
Yeah, Rob, way to go. What a decision that is.
You're on mute.
He's still muted. Rob, you have to unmute. On the bottom, I don't know that he can. On the bottom.
There you go.
Oh, wow. Okay, I thought I left the meeting. I thought I was out of it, so.
You're trapped here with us now.
I haven't started the NEPT yet, not till September, so.
Well, having been through ERC, you're already way ahead of the game, so.
Yeah, some of the work you'll be able to be like, oh, I did that, yeah. Yeah. Carrie's right. There's a lot you'll recognize. So that's good. Okay, congratulations. So okay, I'm gonna hop off. I get this angry cat in my lap.
Oh, good,
she left. So everybody have a good evening and we'll see you next time. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Annette.
Sure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.